Good morning. You're the very few that have had your breakfast and coffee and gotten here. Thank you for coming. I'd like to present to you a body of work which is a part of a larger study. It's the Pure Cohort Study. It's Prospective Urban-Rural Epidemiologic Study. My colleague and the principal investigator for the larger study is Professor Tandy Puwani, who's in the back. And what we've done is extracted from that larger study and looked at traditional herbal medicine. When I'm on the continent of Africa, we tend to use different terminology. We tend to use traditional herbal medicine when it's specific to herbal medicine. When we come on this side of the world, then we switch to complement alternative medicine. So if you see both, it's just because, you know, I give the presentation to different audiences, so I just want to make sure I'm using the correct terms, appropriate terms. All right, so I have no disclosures to disclose. Presentation outline is pretty straightforward, just the background on stroke, study methodology, results, summary, and conclusion. So if you look at stroke, it's the second cause of mortality and the third cause of morbidity globally. We have well over 17 million cases of stroke, and when you look at the prevalence and the incidence, it's well over 50%. When you look at low-income and middle-income countries, it accounts for about 80% of the stroke that's reported. If you focus in on looking at sub-Saharan Africa, stroke is the third leading cause of death, which parallels what's happening globally. If we focus a little bit more on the experience of what's happening in sub-Saharan Africa, if you look at the rates, you get anywhere from 200 to 315. Per 100,000 of people with stroke. And in South Africa specifically, we have about 25,000 who die from stroke, and of those who are afflicted with stroke, more than 50% end up being disabled. If you look specifically at the region that I'm reporting on in South Africa, is what we call the Western Cape province, it's right at around 8.8% prevalence, and it's higher than the overall country rate, which is 6.5%. If you focus on the figure, looking at the prevalence of stroke by risk factor, again for South Africa, you can see that the two overwhelmingly reported risk factors is hypertension, followed by smoking. This is a overwhelmingly busy slide, but I just want to focus on what's happening on the continent. This is just a graphic presentation of what I've just already told you. So if you look at South Africa, which is circled there, and if you look at the years of life lost, or the DALYs, it's about mid-cap. It's 10 to 14 per thousand. So it's right at that mid-level of stroke prevalence. But what's interesting is if you look at sort of the border here is looking at ages of diagnosis or age of stroke. If you look at South Africa and if you look at blacks in South Africa, it's very young. The age group is between 20 and 34. So we have a very young age grouping of people who are afflicted by stroke. Again, another graphic representation if you look at mortality or deaths of stroke. Again, if you look at South Africa, which is circled here, it's at the mid-cap between, as I reported, 10 to less than 100,000 reported deaths. And again, with stroke being the third leading cause of death. So I want to make a transition in looking at what you call here complement alternative medicine and what we call traditional herbal medicine. So it, as part of this larger cohort study that's looking at individual, family, community, environmental factors related to cardiovascular disease or what we call NCDs, non-communicable diseases, diseases of the lifestyle, we were also interested in this cohort's use of traditional herbal medicine. So this is an existing study. It has 2,000 participants. It's more than 20 countries worldwide. South Africa is one of 20 countries involved. And so we just sort of extracted the stroke participants and their use of traditional herbal medicine. But if you look at the use of traditional herbal medicine, it's around about 60%. Depending on the literature that you use, it ranges anywhere from 60 to 80. That's based upon whether people are using it specifically for a condition or they're using it as a way of maintaining their health, meaning not accessing the healthcare system. So with having that limited information, we decided to embark upon this study of looking at the use of traditional herbal medicine and stroke. I just wanted to show this picture that if you're in the rural area, and this is Mount Frere, where we have one of our study sites, and the young lady in the back is a former master's student who was doing an ethnobotanical survey among the traditional healers. So these are the traditional healers. They're in Yangas, the two gentlemen, and the women are Sangomas. So you're more likely to encounter one of these traditional healers, which would be the healthcare practitioners, than being able to walk and drive to a clinic. The focus of this presentation is not the traditional practitioners, but just to illustrate the access. So, as indicated, our study objective was to look at identifying the traditional herbal medicine use among self-reported stroke participants from the larger PURE study. So, as I indicated, this is a larger study of 2,000 participants. It's prospective, going on for approximately 10 years. We're right at about going into year four. So what we did is at baseline, we looked at the participants in the study. This particular site that we looked at in Cape Town is 1,000 participants. So of that 1,000, we identified 95 self-reporting stroke participants. And then we went through the database and we found that there had been deaths. And so from that point, we had 85 who were eligible, and I won't go through all of them, but certainly we lost some people to follow up. They relocated, there were refusals, and what we ended up coming with is two levels of participants: the self-reported stroke participants, which was a 24, and then we had the non-stroke participants, was 30. So what we decided to do is look at both non-stroke and stroke participants for this particular study and looking at the use of traditional herbal medicine. Let me just indicate that when we reviewed the file, the records, the participants, because the self-reported had indicated they had stroke. But when we went in and looked at the files closely and actually interviewed the participants, they in fact, the 30 did not have stroke. So we decided to keep them in just to see, to look at their use of traditional herbal medicine. So it was from the township of Langa, which is in the Western Cape Province. They're primarily black, mostly speaking. The age range was between 35 and 70. And we collected the data. It was face-to-face interviews, and we conducted the basic analysis. Just to highlight the social and demographic characteristics, the majority in this cohort were older females, greater than 55 years of age. The average monthly income was somewhere around $100 and $200 per household. There was a high school education or less for this population. If people identified that they were unemployed, it was generally due to illness. A little under 40% were unmarried, and the majority practiced Christianity. If you looked at medical characteristics, about 60% had indicated they had stroke. Remember, we have stroke and non-stroke included in this particular analysis. Most of them had been diagnosed somewhere between 1 to 5 years when we administered this questionnaire. A little under 60% had been hospitalized. And if you look at the classic symptoms of stroke, most of them had reported that. Very interesting, when you looked at comorbidity, most of the participants in this study had some comorbidity, primarily being diabetes or hypertension being highly reported, about 80%, followed by diabetes and then arthritis. Again, we asked about traditional herbal medicine use, and 40% reported that. And if they were using traditional medicine in combination with what we call conventional medicine, close to 90% were utilizing both. If you looked at conventional medicine use, and again, we're looking at not just what we call medical pluralism, but the fact that they're using traditional medicine in conjunction with their medication for a diagnosed condition. They were taking medications for stroke, yes, for diabetes, yes, hypertension, and the vast majority on some kind of prescription medication. We also had a very extensive Likert scale on traditional herbal medicine use, and I won't go through all of these. It's a much longer list than this, but more than 80% of the patients believed that traditional herbal medicine was natural. It had fewer side effects, and again, they're comparing their experience with traditional herbal medicine and conventional medicine. Two-thirds indicated that the THM boosted their immune system. 78% agreed that THM prevented diseases, and that doctors should really advise them and patients more on the use of an alternative medicine or alternative practice, more so, and not necessarily based on the clinical evidence. And more than 70% agreed that THM is a holistic approach, and they indicated that it should be tested for safety. And again, these are just some of the parameters that was asked of this particular cohort. We did a bivariate analysis, and it was a very small number, so we just wanted to see if there was anything that would come out of it. And when we looked at the use of traditional herbal medicine by select characteristics, we found that nothing was particularly significant, at least statistically significant. But it was interesting that when you asked people about their current health, none of them indicated they had poor or fair health. I mean, they pretty much felt that their health was, you know, pretty good, from good to very good. So, in summary, I just want to highlight that most of the self-reported patients, as indicated, were female, and their unemployment was due to illness. They had major comorbidities in terms of being hypertensive and having diabetes. 42% of the traditional herbal medicine users were traditional herbal medicine users, and they were combining herbal medicine with their conventional medicine. They used traditional herbal medicine feeling that it had fewer side effects and had better impact on their health and was much more of a holistic approach. What we found with some of our other studies, we've looked at hypertension, we've looked at diabetes, is that people are not necessarily using traditional herbal medicine specifically for stroke symptoms or specifically for diabetes. They're actually using it for overall health maintenance and well-being, so to build up their immune system. This is particularly with this cohort what we've consistently seen in our other work and publications. We have to admit, in terms of the limitations, it was a very small sample size, so therefore it's not generalizable. There's clearly selection bias in terms of, you know, how people were first of all, it's an existing study, but how it was pre-screened and selected from an existing study. And of course, this was self-reported stroke. So these are participants in this larger study. We're asking them a number of different questions about their medical history. So they self-reported on stroke, and as I indicated earlier, some of them indicated stroke. And when we actually ended up, you know, further examining, they in fact had not had stroke, and even the definition of stroke, you know, varied. So, in conclusion, we feel that there needs to be further exploration into generating more knowledge about medical pluralism, especially among the cohort of people what we call NCDs or non-communicable diseases, hypertension, diabetes, and so on. There needs to be increased education awareness among patients and healthcare practitioners about THM use. Again, based on some of the other work that we've done with this same cohort, we found that patients are not disclosing to their healthcare providers about their use of traditional herbal medicine. And in fact, you know, healthcare providers are not asking either, are you using, you know, alternative medicine, alternative practices in conjunction with the prescription medication or administered medication. We feel that there needs to be more knowledge generated around medical pluralism and self-treatment so there can be an avoidance of adverse events and drug-herb interactions, which we know for a fact, you know, can and will occur. And on one side, we have healthcare professionals indicating that traditional medicines are toxic. But, I mean, we really don't have the studies to substantiate that, but that is sort of what is believed and indicated. And if we're going to really have successful medical intervention, especially around stroke, then healthcare providers need to understand the cultural and personal dynamics of medical pluralism, where people are vacillating between two systems, or furthermore, in a rural area where you have limited access, people are going to gravitate towards, you know, what is personally and culturally relevant in that particular environment. I'd like to acknowledge the Pure Study staff, the field workers and participants, and the sponsors of this research was the National Research Foundation in South Africa, the University of the Western Cape, and the Claude Leon Foundation. And I'll leave you with a nice picture from Cape Town. We're on Table Mountain. For those of you who haven't been to Cape Town, you're now in Cape Town on Table Mountain overlooking the water and where Nelson Mandela was imprisoned in Robben Island. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Gail, for that nice presentation. We're precisely talking yesterday with Prasad about the importance of characterizing the use of CAM among different populations, how we need to know more about that to target interventions and also to have a better understanding of how we address the needs of different populations. So very important your study. So we would like to take a few questions now, and then we will take more questions at the end for a panel discussion. So is there anyone that is in? Yes.
Yes, absolutely. I didn't provide that information, but it varies. Generally, if people in this particular case are self-medicating, then they may use, for example, there's a plant called Sotalandia fertescens, which is really good for immune modulation. So again, it's used for building up your immune system. So if you're sick, no matter HIV and AIDS or diabetes, hypertension, you want to build or boost your immune system. So people would more than likely be taking that. If they're going to a traditional practitioner, then it would be just like when you go to Chinese medicine, you would get a culmination of herbal products pulled together, oftentimes in tea form, and then being administered. So I didn't provide that information, but there's a litany of things depending on what people are utilizing. Sometimes we find, as I said, they're using Sotalandia fertescens, which is a single plant, which is dried and then taken as a tea, to a combinations of herbs pulled together. Yeah, this one, when I say THM, we just focus on herbal practices, herbal medicines. In other studies, we do ask about a practice. So some people use mpopo, some people burn incense, some people take holy water. So we were less interested in this analysis in the practice, but more around herbal medicine. Yes, Beth. That's a very interesting question. So let me answer it in this way. A few years ago, the government established what they call Traditional Practitioners Act. So this is a way of the government acknowledging the fact that these kinds of practices exist, that there are traditional practitioners, that they do have a patient population, that people are using what you might want to call, we call here, integrative medicine. That doesn't mean necessarily it's well accepted. So we have 9 provinces in South Africa. There's one province, the KwaZulu-Natal province, where I can say that there is integrative medicine, meaning traditional practitioners can go into a clinic, they can go to the hospital and see patients, and there is that very integrative way in which the two practices interface. But in the Western province, you're less likely to see that. So if people are doing integrative medicine, it's based upon their own ability to utilize both systems. And in another study that we've done and published on for people who are HIV positive, people reporting that they were being yelled at by the healthcare practitioners when they disclosed that they were using herbal medicine or any other practice. They feared that they might not be able to get their medication or be seen at the clinic if they disclose that they were using traditional, medicine or some practice other than being given a prescription drug. So I think a lot depends on regionally. If you look at West Africa, I would say they have a very good example, like Mali, in terms of integrative medicine. I mean, you can go to a clinic and you have an option to see either a healthcare practitioner and or traditional practitioner, and it's blended very nicely. So I think a lot of it has to do, regionally, the acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
As a follow-on to that question, in different countries, like for example in Colombia, people see differently what we call CAM from what is understood as traditional practices, mm-hmm. traditional indigenous practices. Mm-hmm. Have you seen any similar pattern in South Africa where they separate like traditional Chinese medicine and homeopathic and other approaches from foreign countries?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. We have Ayurvedic medicine, we have Chinese medicine. Oh, absolutely. I mean, this particular cohort, it's less likely to be seen, seen using these alternative practices such as Chinese medicine because it's a longer story, but because of the target population. But absolutely, we have CAM. And in fact, for, you know, CAM, there is some appreciation of and embracing of it, but still it's sort of seen as separate and not necessarily as integrative as we see here in other countries in Europe and America.
But it is CAM seen like in the eyes of conventional practitioners. Do they see CAM and traditional medicine differently, or do they put them all together kind of in the same bucket, or how do you?
I think that they would put them all in the same bucket, but there would be some priority. So if I would say the practitioners are more likely to be receptive to CAM versus traditional medicine or traditional herbal medicine, if I had to prioritize it in that way. So, and I'm saying CAM as like yoga or chiropractic services and acupuncture and those kinds of things. So there would be a level of priority. But in this target population I'm talking about, they would be less likely to report on yoga, CAM, chiropractic, because they just wouldn't have access to those kinds of